to me last time, my hearing aids are very powerful, and I hear way too much. So let's turn these off. See, now that sounds much better to me. And so does it sound okay to you? Because I'm still getting a lot of feedback. So let's just take them off. Maybe that'll help. So don't let me sit on those, okay? I hear enough out of this end of my body anyway. Yeah. So most of you know me by now. I struggle with the human condition, and I reflect on it all the time. And trying to be self-reflective, this still sounds very, very loud to me, and a lot of I'm getting a lot of back. Yeah. And so that's much better. And so because I do a lot of self-reflection, I'm accused of living in the past a lot. And you have to go back to the past in order to be self-reflective. That's just a two-way street. And so it's a very fine line. But our self-reflections must take us to the past, even if it's as recent as yesterday or last year or 5 years ago or 15 years ago or when we were younger. It must take us back there because it's all in trying to figure out who we are today and how we got to where we are. And so I'm pretty much okay with everything that's happened to me in my life as a kid and growing up. There was a lot of stuff, and I was a wild, unhealthy kid. You've heard part of my stories here before. And all of that's in trying to figure out how we got here today. So today's talk is about internal and external conditions and how these conditions... Well, it's also a little bit about causes and conditions, right, which is very science of mind language. And so what I've termed is what I've come to call these things, internal and external conditions or causes and conditions, is everything happens at a point of impact. And this is where I'm going today. And the point of impact is the same across the board. It's the same for you as it is for me. It's the same for everyone. What's different is the stories. Right, the circumstances and the events change, but the point of impact is the same. And the point of impact is that point of violation of trust, of love, of those things. And regardless of the story, the point of impact, when it happens, remains the same across the board. And this is what allows us to have empathy for someone whose story is so much different than ours, but what we recognize is the point of impact. And so that's kind of what we're talking about, and that's one of those internal conditions that can hold us back, because it's often very, very scary to go back to that original point of impact. And so we allow these external conditions to kind of rule and channel our life into certain directions. So, with that, there is also this moment of betrayal, right? So I just want to re-say this, because the point of impact for someone might be a lie, the point of impact for someone else might be a slap in the face, or the point of impact might be the insurance company not reimbursing them, right, for some of the hurricane relief efforts that are going on. But the lack of reimbursement actually goes way back to another point that wasn't fulfilled at that point. And again, this is what allows us all to share in that level of empathy. And so in my self-reflections then, as I explore these external conditions, I sometimes feel like I'm climbing one mountain range after another mountain range, or sometimes I feel like these beautiful leaves, I start out graceful and beautiful and I'm connected and I'm just kind of hanging there just all in my glory, and the next thing I know, I am flying somewhere and I don't know, I might end up in the gutter, I might end up in someone's yard, or some lovely person might pick me up and admire the colors and place me in a book and press me forever in time, right? That we don't know where we're going. That's the point. Once we leave that grounded space and we're out there flying around, all of these external conditions start having impact on us. And that, remember, Newton's third law is, let me read it just to make sure I've got it correctly. So I've got it here. Newton's third law, where is that? So I was telling Bill that my external conditions allowed me to not work on this. I procrastinated, and I thought it was such a great topic. And so, and I worked on it, but I kept getting stuck until last night. I prayed before I went to bed. And when I woke up this morning, I woke up at 5, and it was like, this is what I'm talking about. And so I might seem a little unorganized, but it's really all clear in my head. Because right now I can't find Newton's third law. So, there's too many papers here. And I'm not used to standing here. I'm trying something different. So, this is always a good thing, isn't it? 1 second. This is what I do with my students, too. I wonder if I took that out this morning. No, I didn't. Newton's third law, just so that I get it accurate here, is that for every action, and you all know this, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And this statement means that in every interaction that there's a pair of forces that are operating on each other. And the two interacting objects, the size of the force on the first object equals the size of the force on the second. And I think that there's a misunderstanding in this statement. And that it doesn't necessarily mean that if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back equally hard. It means that my reaction is going to have the same amount of power. So this is where I'm going with that. If Newton's law of action and reaction, if there is a point of impact, then our reaction is equal to that point of impact, whether or not it actually affects the external circumstance or not. And so this is where we come to a point of choice in our lives. This is the external condition that arises, because we can withdraw, which many of us do. We get a point of impact, something happens, and unless we go back to the source, we withdraw with equal impact as the point. Does that make sense? So this is nothing new to any of us. It's just a different way of looking at it. On the other hand, if we recognize that point of impact for ourselves and recognize what our story is, then we can respond with equal force by stepping forward and stepping out of our stories. But we have to recognize where that story happened in the first place. Otherwise, there's a hollowness or a shallowness to the level of response. It's we all know because of the point of impact, but if we're afraid to really empathize with people who are different than us, then we can't stand for them, and unless we recognize it in ourselves. So with that, this is, you all know that I teach at Haywood Community College, and every semester and every 2 days, I talk to over 150 students over the course of 2 days. And this happens every other day, every day I teach at Haywood. And I ask them questions. And the questions that I ask the students are you loved? And I have them put their heads down on their desks so they can't see people raising their hands. And I say, do you feel loved? And very few people raise their hands. I said, do you feel alone? Everybody raises their hands. I say, do you feel connected to people around you? No one raises their hands. And at first, those answers really surprised me. I thought everyone felt connected but me. And then I realized, If I don't feel connected, people around me don't feel connected either because of the point of impact. Because of Newton's law, there's an equal reaction happening all the time. If I don't feel connected, I'm not projected connectedness to you. And so then I have to go back and look at the level of reciprocity that I have in my life. And if I don't feel reciprocity from you, you're not going to feel it back from me. And this was a stunning revelation to me, and one that I've had a difficult time putting down on paper, because I think that it goes to this concept of activism. And we recoil. I cannot tell you how many times people have said to me, I don't listen to the news. I don't read the papers. I don't want that stuff in my life. I don't want it around me. Well, that's exactly the thing. I heard someone complain the other day about the muted colors of the leaves on the mountains. And while I was driving here today, I thought to myself, you know why they see muted colors on the mountain is because they have created a bubble around themselves, because they have created a world that doesn't include everything. And we have to allow everything in to some level that we can allow it to be there, so that we can step out into the beauty or into the midst of uncomfort, of dis-ease in our lives. And so I think that that's a problem. So how do we do that? How do we step out of our comfort zones, these snow globes that I talked about the other day at another center? We talked about how we live in these snow globes, and every now and then this little giant comes along and shakes it, and we're like, ah! And then we just kind of, everything settles and we go on again. That was out of a Twilight Zone episode. So now you see how my mind really works. And so... And this is kind of the second part to that talk. And so how we deal with these things and how we deal with the questions sets our tone for our meditations. But I believe we have to go back. And in Science of Mind, before we do a spiritual mind treatment, before we do an affirmative prayer in unity or in anywhere, we have to recognize what it is we're dealing with. And sometimes it's easy to just fall into, you know, oh, I want peace, oh, I want harmony, oh, I want wealth and strength and ability to move, all of those things without starting at the beginning. And I believe that I need to always go back to the beginning, especially when I start feeling like I'm one of those leaves just kind of blowing in the wind. I have to say to myself, there's three questions that you ask before an affirmative prayer. The first one is, what's the presenting condition? What is the presenting condition? It could be that a student recently filed a complaint against me, which is, you know, fine. Students file complaints against me every semester, one reason or another. And I teach communication, so I'm like, go articulate your voice. You know, good for you. Go do it. I'm lucky and fortunate that the dean has got my back, because I teach public speaking and students often don't want to speak. And I say, what is it? And they're like, well, I just don't want to, but what is it? And they're afraid. And I'm like, what is it that you're so afraid of? And everyone's basic fear is a fear of being judged, a fear of being wrong. And so fear motivates our life. So in every presenting condition, you're going to find fear. In my opinion, of course. And so what is your presenting condition? What is the issue that you're dealing with? Like right now, if you reflected on that, what would that issue be? That's the question. Anything that creates disharmony in our life, or something that we're struggling with, or something we don't want to look at, you know, whether it be the politics, the hurricanes on the East Coast, the racism, the homophobia, the sexism in our culture, if you don't want to look at those things, why not? They're just things. They are just external conditions to the larger world. And so you really have to wonder, why are people so reluctant to look at the issues that are presenting themselves, because if they weren't issues, they wouldn't be presenting themselves over and over and over again. And the same thing happens in our life. We run into these themes. Each of us, you have a theme today, and it's that Christmas tree. And what better theme could you go for than a tree for Christ? That's just a bad joke. Okay, so I have a repetitive theme of bad jokes. There you go. What is the theme in your life? That's the question, regardless of what that external condition is. And I know mine, and I've talked about them with you before, and they come up over and over again. I'm getting older. I'm not quite as able as I used to be to do things. I even got a flu shot this year, which my friends were like, "You got a flu shot?" And I'm like, you know, I'm getting older. I'm not as healthy as I used to be, not as active. And I think it's a good thing. And so I'm trying to justify it in my own mind, because there's another part of me that believes I'm healthy and strong and doing everything I need to do to care for myself. And I decided getting a flu shot was one of those things. So, okay. But the truth is that it came out of a fear of getting sick this year, because I don't feel as healthy as I used to because I'm getting older. The other one is that my other recurring theme is that I'm poor. That it won't ever matter really how much money I have, because I was raised poor. I'll always be poor. I manage my money poorly. It just goes over and over. The themes are in my head. But the truth is that that's one of my recurring themes. The other one is that I'm unlikable, right? You've all heard these three themes from me before, I believe. The other is that I'm unlikable. If a friend cancels with me, it's because I must have done something wrong, or they really didn't want to spend time with me anyway. It has nothing to do with their life, of course. It all has to do with me, because my world revolves around me. And so a few weeks ago, a group of friends, an event got canceled. We were all going to go. Someone bailed. Someone else couldn't go. Things happened, and I was left standing there thinking, my friends don't like me anymore. Doesn't matter that their lives were happening for them, their external conditions. They were my external condition, and I had to come back to that. So if I'm old and I'm poor and I'm unlikable, then I had to look at, within all of these internal and external conditions, I had to really go back to what's the presenting issue. It's not that my friends canceled on me. It's not really getting a flu shot or that I'm getting older. For me, it comes back to fear. It comes back to fear of getting sick. It comes back to fear of being alone. Like so many of us feel disconnected, unconnected, and lonely. And it goes back to this fear of being poor in our culture and not being worthy. And more than being poor financially, it's this whole concept of that I'm not worthy to have abundance in my life, whether that be friends or health or wealth or anything. I'm not worthy. And so that sets the tone. That sets my prayer in action, right? Because now I know what I'm praying for. I know what I'm praying about. I know what I'm asking the universe to recognize within me is that release from the fear that I harbor inside, and to recognize that abundance is my divine right, that wealth is my divine right, that health is my divine right. And so once I focus on those issues, I can step back into the world and recognize that the external conditions are not what control me. It's not the flat tire that controls me. It's my reaction to the flat tire. And it's not anything out there. And this is an example I also used with the snow globe, is that if you're holding a cup of coffee and someone bumps into you, what spills out is coffee, right? Because that's what's in your cup. So if someone bumps into you and you turn around and flip them off or gesture wildly at them because they cut you off on the freeway, that's what's inside of you. That's what spills out when you get jostled. right? It's not the person that jostles you. It's what's inside of you. And so that's where these internal and external conditions come from. And that's where they go. So Rasha says that we live in a world where we actually allow this circle, and not allow, but it's going to happen one way or the other, what she calls discordant opportunities for us to grow. I like that phrase. It's a very polite way of saying shit happens. And but excuse me for, you know, the young ones, I should... Compost happens. Thank you. So discordant opportunities to grow. And I like that because they happen and they happen and they happen. They will always happen. That's the point. Life will always continue to happen in a discordant opportunity, which allows us to be self-reflective and to grow. Once we have reached a plateau where our spiritual world is so calm and so vibrational, we have transitioned, right? We are not because, or we have just locked ourselves away in a convent or a small closet because where we don't see life going on around us, because that life, whatever we disagree with out there, is giving us a discordant opportunity to grow. And so we cannot live as humans without challenges. Even if you lived in a small closet with no Wi-Fi and no TV and no radio, you would still find something to be unhappy about. It might be the crack in the wall. It might be the fading color of the paint. It might be the snag in the carpet from your cats. But there would be something that would continue to allow you to grow. So I would encourage you to step out of those snow globes and those closets and those quiet little meditation rooms and bring that out with you into the world and let Newton's law have a full impact on you. Because if we are to be the spiritual warriors that actually have impact in the world, we cannot do it from our bedrooms and our living rooms. We have to take that presence that we've grown to love within us out into the world with us and allow Newton's law to bounce off of us with equal power. And what I know with all of that is that with something that Holmes says, Ernest says on page 118 of the Science of Mind textbook, that the universal subjective mind, being entirely receptive to our thought, is compelled by its very nature to accept that thought and act upon it no matter what the thought might be. Right? So if our first thought is to recoil, then nature continues to advance in that sense. External conditions will continue to advance until we're face to face with them. And I know that we've all felt that. I know that we've stepped back and mended and put a Band-Aid here and a Band-Aid there, and then the next day we wake up and it's right in our face. And we still have to deal with something we thought we had kind of resolved, but not really, because we didn't go to the source. And that source is deep within us. And that's where the spiritual warrior resides, is waiting for us to give a call to arms to say, let's deal with this. Let's deal with the fear. Let's deal with the loneliness. Let's deal with that unworthiness inside. And so Holmes goes on to say that limitation is not in principle nor in the law, but in the individual use that we make of principle. Our individual use of principle can only equal Newton's law, our individual capacity to understand it and to recognize it. And that makes perfect sense. And he says, we cannot demonstrate beyond our ability to provide a mental equivalent of our desire. So if we are fearful and we are not at peace, we can't really effectively pray for peace. And if we're continually allowing the world to jostle us by retreating, because that's the equal force that's pushing us back and forth. And so The goal is trust who you are, know the truth of who you are, and step back into fray in whatever capacity that you can and say, no, love is all there is. And here's the thing. Equal reaction, response to fear, and the withdraw, just to repeat that. The three questions you want to ask are, what is the presenting condition? Right? What is the mental cause that keeps me limited? And what is the spiritual truth of what I know of, at this point in my life? What do I know God really is? And then always remember, you are never alone. You are always every attribute of the divine. You are always health, wealth. You are always harmony. You are always peace. You are always light. You are always love. And you are always life. And that is the truth of the divine. And so that is the true internal condition that pulls us out of where we are and out of who we are. And always remember, you're never alone. It's always one mind, much like the music today, one mind, and there all there really is love. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Keep that, I'll take that. You can have that. Thank you.